It is the FTN Fast Break Podcast, Episode 3, Friday, August 2nd, 2024. Welcome in, everybody. Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawisenberg DFF, your host here on the Fast Break. No Mike Randall here on Episode 3. Mike getting some very deserved downtime before NFL season kicks off. We had the Hall of Fame game last night, so I managed to luck into getting my old buddy, Adam Pfeiffer, out of the NFL streets here in August. This is a rarity. Adam Pfeiffer joining me here today on Episode 3. Fife, how we feeling, man? What's been going on?
Yeah, what's up, buddy? It, of course, started absolutely downpouring outside right when we hopped on the call. But yeah, man, I love this time of year. It's actually my favorite time of the year for, like, content-wise, because I love diving into all of the teams in the offseason, the players, making cases for football. But yeah, I still talk to you all the time about basketball. I still love talking about hoops. We got a lot going on with the Olympics, obviously. And I'm excited too, because I will have way more NBA stuff on the site, like, right when the season starts, not just like once football's coming down to an end. So I'm excited about that. It's definitely going to be a fun season, and everything's good in Cleveland land, man. Everybody's back.
Yeah, man. We will certainly talk about the extension to one of your boys there in Cleveland. Couple other pieces of NBA news. We'll start with the Olympics, and of course, we will close things out with stock up and stock down. So, Fife, let's start here with the Olympic tournament. You and I just finished up watching the four-pack of games here today, I guess. I will be completely honest. You and I both averted our eyes in favor of sleep for that 5 a.m. Eastern Brazil and Japan game this morning. Brazil coming out on top, and a huge result for the Brazilians on the back of Bruno Caboclo. They clinch, which I did not really see coming into this tournament. Brazil going to be, we'll talk through the seedings, but that was the first game of the day. We just finished up watching France and Germany, though, and a statement victory, in my eyes here, by the Germans. Of course, the defending FIBA World Cup champions, but this was a four-point spread coming in, and Germany spent the majority of the second half up by 15 or 20 points, kind of coasting here. Adam, I'll let you start here. What were your takeaways from watching today? Because I know coming into the day, you had mostly been focused on just the USA games, but seeing the German team out here and what they did to that side, the French team, obviously the home team in this tournament, the crowd was raucous. Wembanyama, Gobert, Batum. What were your thoughts on that one? Because, of course, both of those teams have advanced into the knockout rounds, but, again, a dominant win by the Germans.
Yeah, I think the Orlando Magic and Magic fans are very happy watching what Franz did today, especially after the contract extension. Like, we had a stretch where there was, like, a lot of players that have been good and are really good young players. Evan Mobley, for instance, like, getting these massive contracts. And it's like, okay, is it an overpay? But, like, time will tell, but Franz looked amazing today. Had a nice little poster, I believe, as well. And, like, he, Mo, and Schroeder have been, like, there's been a really good rapport with those three. So I kind of asked you before we turned the mics on, like, who do you think could be, you know, who has the best chance of maybe beating Team USA? And you said it's probably, and I don't disagree, it's got to be Team Germany because of the experience, the camaraderie, how well they play as a team. Obviously, you know, it's not like they, you know, like you mentioned, like every time France got it to within like 12-ish, all of a sudden, you know, Franz hit a three or Franz hit a couple buckets and it was back up to 17-18. So they look really, really good. And again, that's not a slouch they just played either in France.
Yeah, man. And the runs you mentioned, right? Like, France did start the fourth quarter, I believe, on a 9-0 run. Then it got to 13-2 at one point. And this was with Victor Wembanyama off the court. You get multiple posters from Cordinier, from Yabusele, right? The French Draymond, as he was known back in his Boston Celtic days. But yeah, man, that when you talk about the biggest threat to the United States, and I guess we can shift a little bit towards the United States here because they'll finish up group play tomorrow morning on Saturday. To me, I respect the German squad for the continuity. These guys have played together for a long, long time. Dennis Schroeder, international Dennis Schroeder, is getting to the point for me, maybe not quite to the heights of international Patty, right? Patty Mills, right? Probably two cycles ago when he got, I mean, I still consider
you got to think
Patty,
too, like, because yeah. with FIBA, games are called differently. And like Schroeder defensively can be really, really aggressive. And like, that's a way better play style for him on top of him just being like a good basketball player. And we've seen the past couple of seasons in the NBA, like the teams he's gone to, like he's been a lot better at Toronto, for instance. At the start of the season last year in Toronto, he was a really improved facilitator. Now we're seeing that over in the Olympics with Team Germany. So he, like, I think it's always so fascinating when you get used to watching, especially when you have such a long break from the Olympics every, you know, 4 years or whatever it is. Yeah, it's 4 years. Going from watching players in the NBA to seeing how things can change. We'll talk, like, look at Joel Embiid, for instance. Like, maybe it's the complete opposite for him. Maybe the FIBA play style isn't as good for him because where they're letting players play a little bit more aggressive on defense and not calling as many fouls. So I think that's always, to me, other than the fact that you get to watch all these amazing players, I think the change in how the game is called and played between the NBA and FIBA is always fascinating to me. That's Schroeder's been huge for that.
Yeah, and it's the different rules too. You bring up Embiid, right, and the struggles. Like, he DNP'd, right, coach's decision there in the second group stage game for the Americans. But you mentioned, like, it's not just the way the game is officiated, right? There's different rules, right? There is no defensive 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So you can really try to clamp down on some of those dominant post presences. And to your point about Schroeder, right? He's been fantastic. Again, these guys are the defending FIBA World Cup champions. And right now, as we said, again, the United States doesn't have to do much tomorrow to pass Germany for the one seed here in the quarterfinal draw. But Germany taking care of business, double-digit victories in all three group stage games, currently with the plus 47 point differential. So again, I guess let's talk about the United States and what is coming up tomorrow. The United States taking on Puerto Rico. They are 35-point favorites here as we are recording. They only have to win by 5 or more points to get that one seed away from Germany. And if they lost, again, would be probably the biggest upset in Olympics history to the Puerto Rican side. But if they lose, they cannot fall further than the 3 seed. So again, it speaks to the work that this team has already done. And I guess I wanted to discuss a little bit more with you because I know you have been watching these United States games. What are your thoughts on how Coach Kerr has done so far? Because we saw in that first game, right, Jason Tatum did not play. Then you've got a little bit of a different matchup with South Sudan. And of course, the United States maybe learning some lessons from the close call they had against that same team in the pre-tournament scrimmages. You see a guy like Joel Embiid DNP in that second game. Anthony Davis enters the starting lineup. Tatum came in for Drew Holiday. And of course, Holiday, one of those guys kind of in the Schroeder mold. I think Drew Holiday has been and continues to be one of the best international guards in terms of the under the FIBA structure because of that physicality he brings on defense.
Drew Holiday is a what, 2-time NBA champion, and he's had a great career.
Gold medalist.
In my opinion, he's gonna be like one of the most underrated NBA players of the last like 30 years because he is pretty much impacted winning NBA, US team, like wherever he's gone, he's massively impacted winning. And it gets a little bit overlooked because the two teams he's won championships on have been Boston, loaded, and then with Giannis and company in Milwaukee. But every time you watch him, it's just like, it's just kind of simple. Like, he is just so good at basketball. He knows when, he's really good at cutting, knows when to cut, and obviously we know what he does defensively. So yeah, that's essentially three-guard lineup that they're running a lot with Derek White, Drew Holiday, LeBron's essentially playing point guard, and then a lot of those lineups will have Steph or Ant on the floor. I think, to me, I think I saw that they said Embiid's going to start the next game. Like, it went from Tatum DNP to Tatum starting, and then Embiid DNP to now Embiid's going to start. With Puerto Rico, they did not have, like, any size. So, like, they could start, like, LeBron at the five and be perfectly fine here and just run that guard lineup they love. To me, the thing that I've been interested in, and I don't want to talk about him too much because we're going to talk about him in Stock Up, but I won't talk about him. I'll tease that for later. But this is not the player I have for Stock Up, but very quietly, Devin Booker's been awesome too. So it's just like Jason Tatum not shooting the ball well. It's kind of carried over a little bit to the regular season from last year. It's just like it's always interesting to talk about it, but in terms of how the fit is, who's playing well, but like barring something unforeseen, like this is still the heavy favorite to win the whole thing. They just have, you know, the best players on the planet. And like it's boring to talk about at this point because he's almost 40 and he's been the best player on the planet for 15 years. But like the fact that LeBron is still doing this to this level is just like, it's one more of the many reasons to just be thankful you get to watch LeBron James throughout his career. Like there's going to be people that weren't able to watch LeBron James play basketball. And that sucks. That really sucks.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Devin Booker because I think you and I are in lockstep there. I think he has been fantastic.
I mean, how would you rank who their best players have been, like top five? Like Braun, D-Book, and I think it's Braun, the two guards I mentioned from Boston, and then D-Book at the top four, in my opinion. And then probably Durant is up there too.
Yeah, I think you got to have KD. I would probably have Anthony Davis.
Davis has been awesome.
I think he's the big that makes the most sense. And you got to think about it from a perspective too of who the coach is now for this team. Steve Kerr still wants to bring a lot of those aspects that he coaches up there in Golden State, right? A lot of that off-ball movement, screening.
That's why Embiid just doesn't fit.
Exactly. And I think that's where somebody like Anthony Edwards, where like you need Anthony Edwards minutes out there.
Holiday is like literally perfect for this system. Mm-hmm. Like he's so good. He's not like the elite like off-screen type of shooter that we've seen. It's not really been his role for a lot of offenses, but movement-wise, he is just always in the right place, like always.
Well, and I think that's some of what you're seeing too with Devin Booker is like he's been willing to defer a little bit more. He's been more willing to do some of that off-ball action and like
Phoenix also just added a point guard that I really like.
Right, right. We'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, man, Booker has been great. And honestly, I didn't really see that coming. And I think some of that, I'm hoping for the Suns, and we can talk about this more in a minute. I hope that he can take some of the lessons he's learning, playing a smaller role on this United States team than he ever will for the Phoenix Suns, take some of the lessons that he's potentially picking up here and bring that back to Phoenix. Because obviously, even though they have all that firepower, they're still not at the top of the Western Conference, not in the upper tier. But to close out the Olympic talk here, and Adam, feel free to add anything else if you have it. The other game tomorrow is South Sudan and Serbia. And South Sudan, in a situation, they are, I believe, 14-point dogs here. So crazier things have happened. They are win and in. And they will also bump Greece for the final spot, right? Eight of these 12 teams moving on to the quarterfinal draw if they lose by two or less. And I'm not quite, you and I were searching for what the third tiebreaker would be because a loss by two would put them tied in record and point differential with Greece. So I'm not sure what that third tiebreaker
is. We were thinking maybe
is.
Like total points scored or something.
Right, but right. That would make some sense to me. But again, a closely contested game tomorrow in South Sudan and Serbia will be the most fun for, you know, the third party viewers like you and myself who don't really care about the result there. Serbia would have to lose by 23 or more points to South Sudan to be eliminated. So haven't clinched yet, but very, very likely that Serbia will be one of those eight teams and South Sudan, of course, clinging to hope there. And Greece hoping that Serbia takes care of business so they can sneak in as the eighth seed. This draw that will take place after tomorrow's group stage wraps up again the top eight teams. There will be four pots, as they call them. So pot D is the 1 and 2 seed. That is likely to be the United States and Germany. They will be drawn against the fourth pot there, 7th and 8th seeds, which is likely to be Brazil and Greece. So there is potential for Giannis against the United States there in the quarterfinals than the other pots we will get. Again, not completely finalized yet, but in all likelihood, if things go according to plan for the United States, for the Serbians, that second pot would be Canada and Serbia. They would be drawn against France and Australia. So put some very dramatic games, at least on paper, in store for us here in the quarterfinal. And I am very excited to get to the knockout rounds because, you know, the winner go home nature of these games from here on out is just, you know, it breeds that drama, right? It breeds the desperation for these guys who have worked their entire lives to represent their country here at the highest level. Cannot wait for the knockout rounds.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you said, what, 14-point favorites tomorrow?
Yeah, Serbia.
If there was an answer for Jokic, I think South Sudan could, like, flat-out win that game. They've been playing really hard. It's just I don't see – not that many teams, really anybody does, but, like, we just saw what Bam did to this team. And I love Bam, but, like, Jokic is the best player on the planet still. And, yeah, if they can somehow slow him down – they have a really good shot, but it's going to be a tall task, obviously.
Yeah, and I think it will take another monumental shooting performance from South Sudan, and they've got shooters out there to really keep up in that one. So obviously, next Friday we will be talking about the upcoming final and the bronze medal game. So looking forward to the knockout rounds this week. That draw will take place over the weekend. Let's talk about some of the NBA news of the past week. And we're not going to push past this any further because we've got Adam Pfeiffer here, a resident Cleveland Cavaliers fan. Jarrett Allen signs a 3-year, $91 million contract extension. That is the maximum extension that Cleveland was allowed to give him based on the current CBA. And that guarantees him, Adam, $131 million over the next 5 years. Jarrett Allen not doing too bad for himself. But again, I know you are Mr. Cleveland Cavaliers around these parts. So talk to me about your thoughts on this as a fan. How does this look going forward? Because again, there's been a lot of uncertainty around your favorite team of late, right? With these four, you know, all-star caliber players. Are we going to pay them all? Is Donovan Mitchell going to stay? Is it now Darius Garland on the block? Talk to me about the Cavs and what's going on here. Start with the extension. I know you texted me when it happened, so I know you've got some good vibes about JA.
So good news for you. When we finally return to doing some streams together next season, I will have a new Cavs jersey to wear. And right. I've been waiting for the Donovan Mitchell extension to purchase a jersey just in case. That is being purchased very shortly. But yeah, this... You know how it goes when a team signs a player and the contract looks like a lot, and then everybody under the Woj tweet just puts holy overpay. This is not an overpay if you really look at it from the grand scheme of things, and it gives them some versatility because there's been and probably will continue to be rumors of okay, they have to trade one of Allen or Mobley. It just isn't working, and the Cavs did play at their best when Mobley and Garland were out and they were running the two man offense between Mitchell and JA. But, like, here's what's going to tell the story to me. We know Jarrett Allen is an all-star center. He's been unbelievable. Rim protection, good touch, really underrated passer out of the short pick and roll. Like, he's awesome. And the problem 2 years ago in the playoff loss was the rebounding. He was not very physical with Mitchell Robinson and company. Was much better starting the Orlando series, then he got hurt, then didn't play, obviously, in the Boston series, which I would have loved to see. Mobley was awesome in that series, despite the 4-1 loss. New coach with Kenny Atkinson, I think he's going to try to get the best out of Mobley in terms of shooting. Mobley started to shoot a little bit more down the stretch of last season, and you look back at Kenny Atkinson when he was with Brooklyn in 2016. His first season there, Brook Lopez went from not shooting any threes to shooting over five per game. And now, like, I'm not saying Mobley's going to become a Brook Lopez level three-point shooter, but I can almost guarantee it's going to be a plan for Atkinson. And if that happens and he starts to become above average to serviceable from three, that's going to change the whole view of this team being able to run that lineup with Mobley and JA. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And then if it doesn't work out, like, they can still trade Jarrett Allen if they wanted to after extending Mobley, because now there's more longevity with the contract. So a team that wants to trade for Jarrett Allen isn't saying, okay, he's on a one-year deal or whatever. Now we have some stability there. So I'm excited. Obviously, Mitchell, I think Donovan Mitchell's a top 10 player in the league. Garland, I want a little bit more from. At the end of the day, like, I'm excited as a Cavs fan. They're going to be a good regular season team. They're going to win a playoff series most likely. They'll probably be a top 5 seed in the East at worst. But, like, at the end of the day, I have to temper expectations because, like, they're just – I just don't think they're at the level of Boston. Probably not New York if they're healthy. And then, like, if Giannis and Dame are healthy, I'd probably still lean Milwaukee. But it's still exciting because Cleveland has been on the up and up, and now it looks like they'll continue to be, at the very least, a very good team for the next handful of years to come.
I'm glad you mentioned the tradability of that contract, right? I think $30 million a year for a guy like Jared Allen and what he's done on the defensive end. You mentioned his ability out of the short role that is underrated, I think, across the league. Very tradable contract, I think very fair. A win for both sides, if you will. But I think my biggest question mark is Evan Mobley, right? I think maybe adding some of this high-end talent around him has stymied a little bit of that development, right? We had people, and I was screaming at the time that it was a ridiculous comparison, but, you know, Evan Mobley's rookie year. So, of course, I had to mention that. But, like, this guy is still extremely young, and I know I'm definitely not the first person or the only person out here saying we need to see Evan Mobley develop that jump shot for this iteration of Cleveland to
work. If he becomes, I'm trying to find a good comp for him offensively, because defensively, I don't think you can list 5 players defensively better than Evan Mobley. I don't think it's possible.
Sure.
And he showed signs in that Boston series, like, as you know, Mitchell and Mobley were kind of running the offense. Mm-hmm. Mobley was really good in that series, so that gave me and Cavs fans everywhere a really good sign. That's my most fascinating aspect of this season with Kenny Atkinson. Is he gonna try to get Mobley to take more jump shots? He was serviceable shooting the ball down the stretch, and they don't even need him to – it's not like they need him to be a 43, 44% three-point shooter, but just shoot him. What if he shot, like, 37% from three? Like, we'll take that.
Yeah, and you've got to keep – I think just keeping defenses honest, right, is going to help that offense immensely. Because
and, like, they could – contract-wise, I don't know, but, like, Cam Johnson's still out there if they want to try to make a trade for a wing. Like,
sure.
So that's what I'm hoping for. I've seen some rumors about Dorian Finney-Smith too. I think their ceiling is like they finish as like the second seed in the East, but then like, I don't know. Like you would think theoretically, like they wouldn't match up that bad against Milwaukee. Honestly, it's just it's going to come down to Mobley. Like we know Mitchell's a top 10 player. It's Garland and Mobley to me. Like Allen and Mitchell are. I know what I'm getting from those two. Mm-hmm. Mobley defensively, I know what I'm getting. Garland has these games where he's awesome, and right out of the gate, he starts off really aggressive, and then he has other games where he's super passive. Like, I remember the one, I think it was game 3 or game 4 against Orlando. Donovan Mitchell was just scoring at will, and he's exhausted. He's dropping like 45 points, and Garland's just not trying to score. I'm like, please help him. Like, he needs help. So, I still think Garland's a really, really talented player. I just need to see him be a little bit more aggressive because, like, Mitchell tells him all the time, too, like, you can score on anybody. You can make these plays. Just go for it. Like, so I'm excited. I'm happy that everybody's back and excited to see what Atkinson does.
One of those two guys has to take the reins as like the second fiddle on offense, right? There has to be a second guy. Kind of clearly
like Garland's an elite 3-point shooter. Like he should be running off screens, Mitchell kind of running the offense. And then you have Mobley and Allen setting screens. Like Garland off screens could be really, really fun. Like he's not Steph, obviously nobody is, but like he has the quickness. He has the quick release to like just really be tough to guard off screen. So I kind of want to see more of that too.
Well, you know, we will have more Cleveland Cavaliers discussion on this podcast leading up to the season. So we'll leave the Cavs in the rear view. Let's talk about what we kind of teased earlier. Tyus Jones lands with the Phoenix Suns. Fife. 1 year,
how
$3.3 million. That's the veteran minimum for Tyus Jones. So I guess my first question, like you just kind of said there, how? And I think my answer is I think he's got a promise from them that he is going to start. So I think your starting lineup is Tyus and Book and Beal and Durant and Nurk. So
I don't think Beal should start. He's going to start. He's making $50 million, but like, and it's not even that Beal was bad last year. Like, Beal was fine. It's just, like, he's
just kind of healthy.
Yeah, he was not healthy. And then, like, when you're making that much money, like, obviously the view is different when you're not having these monster games. You know, I absolutely love Tyus Jones as much as anybody. I think he is, like, this is dating back to Memphis when, like, if John Morant was out, Tyus Jones was just, he was going to give you 18-8. And he's now, I think it's what, 6 seasons in a row, he's led the NBA in assist to turnover ratio. And I was looking at some stats on his basketball reference page. Like, this is exactly the player you want for a team that's playing with Booker, Durant, and Beal. Somebody that is literally not giving the ball to the other team, has that floater, still an elite floater when he takes the ball himself. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Devin Booker defensively. I think Devin Booker, when he's engaged, is a good defensive player. And now that he's not running the point, he can have more, you know, he can conserve more of his, you know, energy and stuff to playing defense. So I think that helps too. And you look at some of these stats on basketball reference, it's actually crazy. So Tyus Jones, I was looking at his, what are these metrics exactly called? Okay, so Tyus Jones has been in the league since, what, 2015? And he's played just over 600 regular season games. He has lost the ball turnovers, just him losing the ball, not even bad passes, just lost the ball 73 times in 600 games. Like, he is as reliable as it gets, and I just was shocked. Like, I think I'm not even exaggerating. You can make the case that teams like New York won the offseason with the moves they made, or Philly with Paul George, whoever. I literally think, and they've also made other moves, Phoenix has. I think this move literally won them the offseason. I'm not saying they're going to be a top 3 seed in the West because the West is so loaded, but I am just that high on Tyus Jones, and I think it's kind of like hand meat glove perfect fit for what Phoenix has. Defensively, their backcourt's going to suck.
Well, it was already like that, though, right?
Right.
Like, and this team has already eschewed defense. We're not out there trying to be a top 5 defensive.
Yeah, we're
going to
win games 120 to 116.
Right. And so, I mean, I'm with you. I like the fit. I can't get to winning the offseason for this team just because I just don't think Phoenix, for me, could ever get there because of how hamstrung they are by the cap, by that Bradley Beal contract and a few others. But if you told me
going into the offseason and free agency, like, they would be able to get Tyus Jones, I'd be like, no, somebody's going to pay him.
It's a huge win. There's no
question. Like, I couldn't believe that. And I was wondering, too, like, I was trying to follow both NBA news and NFL news, and I'm sitting there like, nobody signed Tyus Jones yet, who's, like, one of my favorite players on the planet, and he's really good. And then, of course, he gets this vet minimum deal for a team that obviously is trying to win the title. Where would you rank them in the West, though? Because, like, obviously, well, I assume you still have Denver despite the players they lost. You obviously have OKC, Minnesota. I think the team, and maybe a later pod we can talk about this, I think Memphis is going to go back to being an elite team this year. So I would still have Memphis over them. Dallas. I think the question comes to, like, when you get to, like, the Lakers and stuff like that.
Yeah. And again, and so sixth at best, right? Like, this just
Sacramento still, just got DeMar DeRozan. Like, the West is stupid. Like, If you are, imagine if the Bulls were in the West and they were trying to do the Bulls stuff they've been doing. It's like, we're trying to win, kind of. We're trying to get that 8 seed. Like,
look, man, if you are a fan of a Western Conference team, league expansion cannot get here enough because you're going to get 2 expansion teams in the West and we're going to send 2 of these teams. There's really, like, I only think there's 1 bad team in the West right now, and it's Portland. Utah could still.
So saying, like,
get
even
there.
San Antonio is going to be
better, right? Yeah. I mean, like, and I think they're we don't need to start talking about the Spurs, but Tyus Jones to Phoenix, obviously both of us fans of that, and I think you will see him get, in all likelihood, right, if things go according to plan for Tyus, he's going to get a long-term deal somewhere else for more money this time next year. Last piece of NBA news to touch on here, Gordon Hayward announces his retirement, Adam, a 14-year career spanning 4 stops, of course. First with the Utah Jazz, then Boston, Charlotte, and finishing out this year at the trade deadline with the Oklahoma City Thunder. One-time all-star there in Utah. One thing that I found interesting, he only averaged more than 20 points per game in 1 of his 14 seasons. That was, of course, his all-star season, 22 points, 5.5 boards, 3.5 assists. that season, shooting 47, 40, 84. 272 million dollars in career earnings for Gordon Hayward. I'm very, of course, we are, you know, what, 6-7 years removed from the horrific injury. Yeah. I'm disappointed to not, I think it would be foolish to say that that injury didn't rob us of more great Gordon Hayward years. But I'm not, you know, I don't feel too bad for the guy. We talked about his career earnings and 14 years in the league.
Yeah, if you told me, like, when you said that, I like to think I know a lot about the NBA, but I did not realize it was 14 years for Gordon. Like, considering that awful, awful injury, the fact that he still played 14 years is definitely an impressive career. That like, when you said 14, I was like, really, 14?
Yeah. One, and you think back to his time at Butler, right? Mm-hmm. And just the stamp he put on the basketball universe with his time in college. And just going back through the transaction logs, the pick that was used to draft Gordon Hayward was originally traded by the Knicks in January 2004. So just the basketball reference pages continue to give us content. That was fun to see. Anything else for you on Gordon Hayward? Congrats to him on a solid career.
Absolutely. Hats off.
I will close it out, as we always do, with a little bit of stock up, stock down. Adam, I will let you start here. Who's your stock up for this week?
I alluded to it earlier. I'm going to go Bam Adebayo. Also a player I have loved for years. He has looked awesome for Team USA. We saw down the stretch last year in the regular season him start to shoot some more threes, kind of similar to Evan Mobley. And Bam's always been somebody that, like, he likes to take like that pull up from the free throw line, but hasn't done much from 3-point range for a team that, I mean, obviously, like, Bam is not going to project ever to be, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns, but a team that's always desperately needed help from three. And then he's looked good shooting the ball in FIBA. Now, FIBA, obviously, 3-point line is different. But for me, with like centers and power forwards that aren't like Karl-Anthony Towns, it's interesting because, like, I feel like a lot of the times centers have like too much strength in their shot and the FIBA 3-point line is shorter. So the fact that he's shooting pretty well, granted, you know, small sample size, but that's huge for Miami if this is something that can continue, because they draft what, Khalil Ware in the first round, and he can also kind of space the floor. And maybe they want to have a lineup where Bam's playing more four. And if that allows them to kind of play with two, you know, with a power forward and a center that have size and can shoot, like, that can give them still some because Bam, we know, can guard 1-5. He's one of the few, you know, centers that can do that. It makes Miami really interesting if this, and again, Bam's not going to shoot 40% from three most likely or anything like that. But if he's starting to add this to his game, as he continues to add everything else to his game, he's always been a really good passer. Defensively, he's right up there in that Evan Mobley tier for me. Like, I think it's kind of interesting to watch with Bam. So, and I was just overall impressed with how he's played. Again, we talked about the top five players from Team USA. Bam would make that list just because LeBron, KD have been so good, and Anthony Edwards or Anthony Davis has been so good, and the two guards. But Bam deserves some love, especially last game. He was awesome.
Yeah, and I like the call out too about them drafting Ware. Ware was fantastic in the summer league. So yeah, Bam can continue anywhere close to that type of form from distance, right? That's going to be a big boon for them. I'm going to go back to the Greek team here. My stock up for the week is Kostas Papanikolaou, who did have a cup of coffee in the NBA, but two pieces that I saw. First, Giannis Antetokounmpo was talking about the honor of carrying the flag for the opening ceremonies for Greece. And he said, this is a quote from Giannis: "The day they told me and asked me if I'd be willing to represent the country and be the flag bearer, my first response was, I want my captain, Kostas Papanikolaou, to do it. He had more national team appearances than me." And then Papanikolaou this morning, in what was somewhat of a down game for Giannis, Papanikolaou, very vocal on social media after the victory over Australia, because the Australian Federation had put out a graphic that said Australia versus Greece, and the Greece was crossed out and it said Giannis above it. And they made a giant Giannis with a bunch of like the Australian players looking tiny around him. And Papanikolaou goes onto Instagram and says, first there is Hubris sharing that image, and then there is Nemesis showing an image of the Greek team getting that dub today, and again trying to hold on over South Sudan for a spot in the knockout round. So you know I love my EuroLeague guys. Kostas Papanikolaou has been a EuroLeague staple for a long time, and congrats to him on the big performance here throughout the group stage for Greece. Because again, they were part of Group A. That was the group of death. Definitely me and Mike talked about it last week, the most talented international group stage group that did not include the United States. So Papanikolaou, shout out to him.
Yeah. I think I heard somebody on one of the broadcasts say this is the most we've seen in terms of NBA players just in general that have been in the Olympics that haven't been on Team USA in is it ever or something like that?
So the stat we actually talked about on last week's episode was that when the 92 Dream Team ripped through the Olympics, mm-hmm. there were 9 total opposing players that had NBA experience.
Was that Tony Kukoc one of them, right?
Right. Kukoc was one of them. In this year's field, I believe the number is a very nice 69. It may be 65, maybe getting my numbers.
No, I think you're right. But I think it was 69, I remember correctly. Yeah. Because, of course.
You know, seven times the number of players with either active in the association or with NBA experience. It's just a different game at this point internationally. And so, again, maybe the world hasn't quite caught up to the United States. We see what our team has been doing kind of with all of our first choice guys on this roster. But the competition for the United States,
two of the three best players on the planet are not on Team USA, mm-hmm. Giannis and Jokic. So it's been awesome to see. And I feel like we talk about it every time we talk about the NBA. It's just, I don't think it's been this loaded since I've watched basketball. It's insane.
Yeah. Stock down. I'll start this time, Adam. And stock down this week is me. And let me explain, because this is something I was thinking about when I saw the Gordon Hayward retirement news. He is 6 months and one day older than I am. And I remember when the Spurs traded for and drafted Kawhi Leonard, he was the first San Antonio Spurs player that was younger than me. And so I very vividly remember being in college, you know, a Division II player myself, thinking like, oh my God, man, like this is a landmark, right? The first time that my favorite team since I'm 5 years old has a player that is younger than I am. And now, to my knowledge, this is the first NBA All-Star that was born within 6 months of me that is retiring. So if I didn't feel washed yesterday, I certainly do today. Stock down for Kawhi Leonard.
Mine is pretty simple, and it's just adding to my love for Tyus Jones. Stock down any contending team that needed a point guard and just watch Tyus Jones sign the vet minimum to the Suns. It's really that simple.
I like it. Very simple. And I agree. It's pretty crazy. Vet minimum for Tyus Jones. That wraps up episode 3 of the FTN Fast Break. Fife, anything else for you before we shut it down?
No, I'm happy to see the Hoops pod here. You know, Mike and you know more about basketball than pretty much anybody I know. And especially with the collegiate players, like you guys did a ton of awesome draft coverage for a draft that many did not know many players outside of the top maybe two. So always great to have you guys talking some hoops with your vast knowledge of the game. And I'm excited. Like I said, I think having the ability to still, do all the football content I'll be doing, but also be able to be right into the basketball season once it starts will be fun as well.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself. Appreciate everybody tuning in, sticking with us here on episode 3. Back next week for another episode of the FTN Fast Break. Enjoy your weekend, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.